Let's take a trip down memory lane. It's time for Niagara County's Great History Show.
Oh, good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Niagara County's Great History Show. Today is Wednesday, September 13th, and I am joined in studio with our longtime friend, Melissa Dunlap, the executive director of the Niagara County History Center. So good morning, Melissa.
Good morning. How are you?
I am well. We have a special guest this morning. I'm going to wait and let you introduce her
okay. As
we go on. But I'm certainly glad that you could join us this morning because there's so much going on, especially this coming weekend, that your timing is very, very good to be on the show with us.
Yeah, no problem. So Saturday is going to be a really busy day, and people can't say there's nothing to do because in the morning at 10 o'clock, they're going to unveil the last sculptures in the Lock Tenders Tribute, and that is right down by the locks. The bronze sculptures are there that were created by Susan Geis that depicts a photo that was taken in the 1890s of the Lock Tenders sitting on the stairs along with one young girl, which was the daughter of one of the men. And then at 1 o'clock at Cold Spring Cemetery, we are going to do a cemetery tales, and people can just show up. It's $10, and you have to have cash. At Cold Spring Cemetery, you come in off the Cold Springs entrance, right where the White House is, and then there will be five reenactors from our theater group, the Stuck Back in Time Players, and it takes 2 hours, so if you do come, wear comfortable shoes, bring a bottle of water, and it's just supposed to be a beautiful day. It's supposed to be sunny and 74, so you can't ask for anything more than that. And also, there is the Celtic Festival, and that's at the fairgrounds, and that is both Saturday and Sunday, so you can just go from one event to another event to another event, and maybe you'll have to have ice cream in between at Lake Effect, between the sculptures and in the cemetery tales, but there's great food at the Celtic Festival that you could have for dinner and hear all the bands. And then the Celtic Festival continues on to Sunday, and I do believe that they are going to have the Niagara Shuttle from the Keenan Center to the Celtic Festival. So if you don't want to have to park, well, you kind of park in the back just like you do for the fair.
Sure.
If that doesn't float your boat, you can.
Or you could park there and take the trolley up to the downtown if you want.
Yes,
to.
Yes, you could
do
that.
It in reverse. Start in Rich Corners and take the trolley.
Yep, whichever, that's sure. Right. Good thought. I hadn't thought of that.
Yes.
So if you are interested, I mean, of course, our event is the Cemetery Tales, but there's lots going on. We want everybody to be able to have a wonderful weekend. And so that is Saturday, the 16th. And normally we do have the Cemetery Tales on Sunday, but there is a Bills game on Sunday. And last year I had one Cemetery Tales on a Bills game, and it did not go really well.
Yes.
So we know that, you know, when the Bills are doing better, yeah. And also, I have four sons, so they're that's their interest.
Sure, yes.
Okay. So we have two upcoming events. One is the Oktoberfest, and that is on, naturally, my phone put this thing in. It's on October 21st, and that is also at the fairgrounds on Lake Avenue. It's in the training building, the big, long red brick building where they have the weddings and everything else. And they have a wonderful band called the Frankfurters, and their slogan is, they're the best of the worst. So I just love that. But
that
they are
hilarious.
They're great, and they do a lot of interesting things. I mean, it's wonderful German music. We do have a really large basket raffle that makes it a lot of fun. So it's beautiful food, too, from Donna Ike. She always does a great job whenever she does a meal. So it's just a fun evening of good food and baskets and music. And a lot of people come in their lederhosen and in their dirndl skirts. And so people really get into it. That's really good. And that is from 6 until 9. Or maybe 9:30, I can't remember. So, well, around there. So that does have a cost. If you are interested in that, if you call the museum, it's 716-434-7433. It should be on our website, which is Niagara history.org. And I'm sure it's probably on our Facebook page also. So that's how you can find out about that, or feel free to call, and we'll give the number again. So the next thing we have is on October 26th at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. That's a Thursday afternoon. Bo Balicki, who has a very extensive collection of Jimmy Duffy, the Lockport boxer that really did exceptionally well. He is going to bring his collection in, and he is going to speak about Jimmy Duffy and all of his accomplishments. He has all the original posters. He's just got such an extensive collection. So that's going to be really interesting, and he's very enthusiastic, so that helps. I like enthusiasm.
Absolutely.
So I am the outgoing executive director, so the incoming executive director is Becky Pittler. And Becky has been volunteering for the Historical Society for over about 40 years.
Close to it,
and she was volunteering when I was hired 33 years ago.
No
She's
kidding.
Also been the curator of the Colonel Bond House, and does the one that does all the exhibits for the Winterfest Eve, which is always the first Thursday night in December. And that's a great event if you've never been to that. And we have malt cider and cookies and tours, and the house is all decorated, and it's just beautiful. The house looks really small when you look at it on the outside, but it turns out it's quite large. So I'm going to let Becky talk a little bit, and then we'll get into our subjects.
And I'm looking forward to a lot of events and a lot of keeping the history going into the future.
Okay, so I think maybe you have to start a little bit again.
Okay. Yeah, that microphone wasn't functioning properly. Okay. I'm sorry. So, again, Becky Pittler, welcome to your new job.
Thank you.
And let's start. Tell us a little bit about your background, your history, and what you've done, and what you plan to do in the future.
Okay. Well, I've worked for another nonprofit for over 35 years, so I'm used to working for a nonprofit, and I'm really excited about exploring my passion. I've always had a passion for history, and I'm excited about exploring that and keeping the Historical Society going forward in the future, keeping history alive for the residents of Niagara County and other places. And hopefully going to do some new events and keep the History Center going forward.
Well, that sounds wonderful. You've been there for so long. You know all the ins and outs. You know what's going on. You have worked for a not-for-profit before, so you're probably a very good grant writer, I'm going to guess. And that's one of the most important things, is to keep the cash flowing, to keep the place alive, and keep up with all the maintenance on the buildings. I know, how much maintenance have you done?
Well, we have seven buildings.
Yes.
So, and in March of this year, we actually purchased the building that the Erie Canal Discovery Center Museum is. We had all the contents, but we didn't own the building. The First Presbyterian Church owned the building, but we have purchased that. So now we fully own that building.
Really?
Yes. So we still have five buildings on our main site at 215 Niagara Street. Then we have the Colonel William Bond House, which is on the National Register. It was completed in 1824, and that is on Ontario Street. And then we have the Erie Canal Discovery Center, and that's right near the locks on Church Street. So that was built in 1842, and that was originally a Universalist church.
No kidding.
And that's got canal stone, so that's a wonderful building, too. So we have seven buildings over three sites. So, yes, we do maintenance constantly.
That's right. Yeah.
And they're all older buildings, yeah. So they all need maintenance work.
Yes, yes. So it's constantly fundraising and...
constantly.
Yep, and writing grants and getting the finance. Because it's not cheap to have seven buildings.
No,
that's
it's not.
Seven electric bills and seven...
The insurance?
Seven that. Oh, the insurance has got to be outrageous to have public access to a building, yes.
Yeah, there's a lot. So,
yes.
But we're going to do it.
And we always welcome donations, too.
Yes.
Absolutely, yes.
So Becky's going to talk a little bit about books in... hopefully, well, in my age, the Dick and Jane, and she's going to talk a little bit about some other books, and I have a couple I want to contribute, and that if we exhaust that subject, we're going to go on to Crystal Beach.
Okay, very good. All right, well, let's talk about books, because they're wonderful.
We thought it would be fitting to talk about some school books since school just started back. So some people will remember the McGuffey readers. They were the first popular reading textbooks written in the early 1800s, and they were used into the 1920s. And they were developed to use phonics or the sounding out of word methods of reading. They were followed by the Dick and Jane books in the 1930s. And most people remember the Dick and Jane books as a separate book, but they actually were started in another book called the Elson Readers, and the stories were put in there. And then in the 1940s, Dick and Jane got their own books, and they were written by William S. Gray and Zena Sharp, and the stories all revolved around Dick, the oldest child, and his sisters Jane and Baby. And originally her name was Baby in the stories, and most people remember her as Sally. She was renamed in the later stories. The family included mother, father, grandmother, and grandfather. And the family cat started out as Little Mew. And most people remember later on the cat was renamed Puff. The family dog started out as a terrier and was later a Cocker Spaniel named Spot. And some people will remember there was also a teddy bear in the stories, and his name was Tim. The books were very simple narrative and beautiful watercolor illustrations. And each of the Dick and Jane books contained about 80 words. The authors were concerned that children would get overwhelmed if there were more words than that. So you had a lot of repetitive phrases, and most people remembered Run, Dick, Run, or See Spot, Run.
Yeah.
And it was written over and over again. And it was interesting to note that they only added a new word every three pages.
When I was in school, it was a great big huge book that was on like an easel that everybody, you know, you sat on the reading rug and everybody could see the book.
Ah.
Yeah.
Yep. And they also had flashcards. We were talking about, if anybody remembers the flashcards, the teacher's manual came with large flashcards with the words on them. It was also interesting to note that they were written for a wide range of grades, and the oldest grade was ninth grade. But most people remember the earlier books for the earlier grades. And Dick and Jane and their family were always dressed in the latest fashions. So when they updated the books through the years, they looked in the Sears and Roebuck catalog and looked at the latest fashions, and they put the latest fashions on Dick and Jane.
Isn't that something?
They also lived in a suburban neighborhood in a house with a white picket fence, but there was never any mention of where the house was located. They didn't mention any streams or rivers, mountains, or anything, so that the stories could be any town in the USA or any English-speaking country. It was interesting to note that mother took care of the children in the household while father wore a suit and went off to work each morning at the office. And on the weekends, father mowed the lawn and washed the car.
Those are important, huh?
Yes. Besides teaching vocabulary words, the author's mission was also to teach children good habits. So they were always doing their chores, being helpful to others, and being kind to others. And by the 1950s, Dick and Jane books predominated the school systems, and 80% of the schools in the U.S. and English-speaking countries were using the Dick and Jane books. So that's why they're in a lot of people's memories. But in the late 1950s, people were moving away from the word association of teaching method and wanted more imagination. So some publishing houses asked Theodore Gazelle if he could come up with a more imaginative story that only contained 220 vocabulary words. And most people also know that book because Dr. Seuss was successful with his task, and he wrote The Cat in the Hat story in 1957. This led to the decline in the popularity of Dick and Jane books. The final version of Dick and Jane books was written in 1965, where Dick, Jane, and Sally were older and more sophisticated. The artwork was updated, and the books now contain phonics training added to, in addition to the word method. Dick and Jane lasted into the 1970s in some schools, but then faded into history as more modern textbooks were used in the school systems after that. So we hope we brought back some memories of Dick and Jane.
Yeah, it'd be interesting if somebody would call and tell us if they remember using them in school.
I was just going to bring that up. Could listeners want to give us a call and share your memories with learning on these phonic books and things as such, give us a call at 433-1433. That's 433-1433. We would love to hear your memories of reading these books in your childhood. It'd be fun to see how far back it goes with our listeners. If we got a 50-year-old or a 70-year-old or a 90-year-old that calls and see what their experience with these books were. So again, 433-1433. And for those of you who are just joining us, you are listening to the Great History Show here on WLVL 1340 AM with our now outgoing executive director, Melissa Dunlap, and our incoming new executive director, and we'd love to welcome Becky Pittler as the new executive director to the Niagara History Center. So if you want to call and congratulate her on her new position and say your farewells to Melissa, you are certainly welcome to do that as well, because Melissa's been with us for such a long time and she's done such a fabulous job twice.
There you go. So I looked up some of the books that I read as a kid, and of course I read all of the Nancy Drew books until I kind of aged out of it. And I didn't realize the first one, The Secret of the Old Clock, was published in 1930, and the books continued until 2003. And when the original ones I had didn't have the pictures on them, they were green. They just had a solid green cover. And but that was a great series to get into mysteries and really read. I love to read anyway. Then another one was The Hardy Boys. Yeah. Because you were already reading Nancy Drew, you had to read The Hardy Boys.
That's right.
And those started in 1927 and lasted until 2005, the last one was written. But even my grandchildren now are getting where they're reading these books. I mean, they really are a pretty much timeless book.
And they were just a brown cover, too.
Yes.
The Hardy Boys were brown and the Nancy Drew was green.
Right. What a way to get your imagination working, you know, when the author does these descriptive passages of the woods that they're walking through, or the creek that they're going into, or this mysterious place. You know, it gets your mind just so active, and everybody has a different picture of the same story. Yeah. Unlike tablets, where everybody gets somebody else's picture of a story. So a real book is just so valuable to be reading.
And then I read the Bobbsey Twins. I don't know if people remember the Bobbsey Twins, but they started in 1904 until 1992. And then there was Black Beauty. And I was shocked to realize Black Beauty was written in 1877.
Oh, my.
I had no idea.
No.
I thought
it seems like more of a modern story.
It does, doesn't it? I mean, that really surprised me. So, and then I had Sherry Ames, student nurse. Not that I ever wanted to go into nursing.
Right.
And the guidance counselor at school kept saying, well, why didn't you go into nursing? And I kept saying, no. Mm-hmm. No. And yet I've done a lot of nursing in my lifetime.
Didn't you say you had four boys?
Yes.
Yeah, you did a lot of nursing. No question about that.
So, one of the local authors that really wrote a lot of children's books was Helen Fuller Orton. And she did it because she also had sons. And she had Cloverfield Farm, and it was located near where NCCC is now. That was part of their farm. And so she started writing, and she never got a rejection letter. Every book that she wrote was published.
No,
I mean,
kidding.
That's exceptional.
It is exceptional.
So she did write a lot with historical themes, and there's one about Williamsburg, and there's one, Knights of the Snowstorm, Winter on the Hoover Dairy in Sanborn. It was written in 1939. The one that we have, too, is The Gold Lace Coat. That was about the opening of the Erie Canal. No, that's the old Fort Niagara.
Fort Niagara.
Right.
The Treasure of the Little Trunk is the Erie Canal. Then the mystery of the winding stair was Wyndham Lawn. We have mystery at the Little Red Schoolhouse. That was about the schoolhouse that Helen Fuller Orton taught in for a while, and that has since burned. But she had a lot of local things in her books, and she would come back every year, and she would read books to the students in the classes, and then she would sign the books. And it was a big event when she would come back and talk to these school students because, you know, she was a local celebrity. So that was very impressive. Yep. So there are a lot of her books. I don't know how many are still available. The Gold Lace Coat and The Treasure of the Little Trunk are still were reprinted, so they're still readily available. But a lot of the others aren't. So that was one of the other things. One other thing I looked up was because I was going into school in the late 50s and 60s that I had never thought about was that there was a revolution in education in the mid-1960s, and part of it was due to the Vietnam War. So education policy was being totally changed, the way that schools are being taught, and of course in 1954 there was Brown versus Brown, Education of Topeka, Kansas, Supreme Court decision. But we were starting a little bit into civil rights, and it was amazing. People who really didn't have the idea of going to college now went to college so that they wouldn't be drafted.
Right.
And then when they graduated from college, they got a master's degree so they wouldn't be drafted.
That's right.
And it just never occurred to me that, you know, and it was very interesting because I was in high school at the height of the Vietnam War. And, of course, my brother had gone in the Army, and he had enlisted. So I had somebody in my family who was at the Vietnam, and then my friends who were trying really hard not to get drafted. So
right. Hey, we have a caller.
Sure.
Let's see what's going on. Good morning, caller. You are on WLVL with the Great History Show with Melissa and Becky. How are you this morning?
Good.
What is your thought or memory?
I went to the Little Red Schoolhouse.
Oh, did you really? Oh, how neat. Did you get to meet Helen Fuller Orton?
Yep.
Oh, wonderful. My gosh. How nice. Did you get any of her books?
I don't think so. We used to... The Little Red Schoolhouse was Cambria 11, which stood on Saunders Settlement Road across, like, from the entrance to Bosie's now.
Okay.
And people lived in it for a while, and then it was so, I think they tore it down, and, you know, there's a house sitting there now.
Mm-hmm.
That, yes, and I read Bobsey Twin books, too.
Did you? I remember those.
They were very popular.
Melissa, it's not going to be the same with your familiar voice.
Oh, well, thank you. I know Becky will do a great job. I know probably because I cackle when I laugh, because people who don't remember my name, I'll be in a store and I'll laugh, and they'll say, oh, you're on the radio. So I know that's part of why people recognize me. But thank you very much.
you exercise it. Well, I'm 87, and everybody said I don't sound 87
no,
over
you
the
don't.
Phone. So,
yeah, great.
I had three boys and a daughter, so that kept my voice exercised too.
Yeah. So that's good. Oh, good. Well, thank you so much for calling.
Okay.
All right. Thank you so much,
Colin. Nice to hear you.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. You take care.
Thank you.
All right. And folks, if you'd like to share your memories with us, you can certainly feel free to call us at 433-1433. That's 433-1433. Share your memories. Say your goodbyes to Melissa and your hellos to Becky. And you can feel free to do that at any point in time, because we still have, about 20 minutes left in the show here at WLVL 1340 AM. And always remember, too, if you miss any of this great programming with these history shows, you can go to WLVL.com, pick the podcast, pick your date, and you can relive all of these great shows at your convenience. So, Melissa, you were in mid-sentence about another book.
Oh, gosh, I don't remember now. I did. I was... I really wasn't. I still am an avid reader.
Absolutely.
In fact, I have a grandson. We have a Goodreads list, and of course, his books are a lot shorter, but every time, so I've read 25 so far this year. So every time I do it, he increases the amount that he's going to read, or he reads faster, or he reads the graphic novels that are quicker so that he can
stay in front of me.
Hey, we have another call. Good morning, caller. You are on WLVL with Melissa and Becky. What is your thought or your memory?
Well, I didn't go to a Little Red Schoolhouse, but I went to a four-room schoolhouse, and actually this was in Bowmansville,
okay,
Erie County. And it was a Sacred Heart school, and we had the first and second, third and fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth together. So two grades in each room.
Mm-hmm.
And the nuns would come in from the convent. They'd be taxied in the morning. They'd spend the day at school, taxi pick them up, and take them back, and I tell you, we had two grades, and so the nun would teach one while the other worked, and so on. But I tell you, we got the best education.
Oh, good.
We really did.
Did you have Dick and Jane books?
No, that's what I was going to ask. Did you have the cathedral readers? Because those were the Catholic version.
I can't remember, but I do remember the Dick and Jane books, because I also went to school, before that, early in St. Joseph in Albion, and I do remember the Dick and Jane books, so I think I must have had them. I don't know if I had them there at Bowmansville, but I did have them earlier. But and Dick and Jane, and I think those were great books too.
Because there was a Catholic version of the Dick and Jane books called the Cathedral Readers.
And okay,
they had
maybe
a different family in there, but it was the same as Dick and Jane and Sally, but there was a different family and they had different names, but they were written for the Catholic schools.
Okay, and they may have been it, because I certainly remember that type of book. But I'm going to say, with all the advantages, supposed advantages that kids have today, I tell you, We still got a great education. It was a great time, and I tell you, those nuns really loved us, and they put a lot into their educating us.
Oh, good.
That's good.
That's good to hear. Yeah. So.
And it brought back some memories for you.
Oh, very much so. Yes.
That's good.
Well, thank you. Thank you for calling.
You're welcome.
Appreciate you. Now that's what it's all about, right? Is to bring back and preserve memories and the history of our culture and our society.
Yes.
As we change and evolve, and
because now everything's on screens. The kids all have iPads.
Yeah, they don't have books.
Yeah, it's really different.
Yeah, and they don't teach cursive handwriting anymore.
Well, they did start again in Lockport.
Did they start again?
They
okay.
stopped, because we had some interns for a couple of years, and I had asked them to transcribe something, and they couldn't read it because it was in cursive. But now they're starting to, I think they realize that there's also a coordination element
right.
of cursive writing.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a whole brain function.
Yes.
Because it's continual.
Well, just signing your name.
Yeah.
Yeah, what are you going to do, put an X?
It's got a lot of
yes.
It's got a lot of benefits. Just like music has so many benefits
right.
besides just learning music. I mean, you're using a different part of your brain. It's just a whole different set of things in art. That's why, you know, you need things other than just normal classes. The music and art and things.
Absolutely,
that
you
just
have to have it all.
Yeah, you have to have it all.
The sciences, the math, the
right.
music. Music is critically important because it is both language and math.
That's right.
You know, it's its own language.
I had a piano teacher. Her name was Olive Johnson. I don't know if anybody, but she lived in Grand Island, and she used to come and pick me up. She was a friend of my mother. She would come and pick me up, and I would take piano lessons. This is like from 6 to 12, and I really didn't want to take piano lessons. But I will say, I learned how to read music. I learned how to transpose music. I learned all about composers. She really taught me a lot.
That's right.
But by the time I was like 12, I was done with that. I wanted to take ballet. I took ballet from 8 until 15, and that was really my love. She finally quit. She told my mother, "That's it, I'm done."
She quit you, huh?
Yeah, she quit.
Hey, we have another caller. Good morning, caller. You are on WLVL. What is your thought or your memory, please?
Good morning, Eric.
Hey, what's going on?
My memory is when I was in grade school, quite young, the Dick and Jane books and the cue cards. And I remember one day I asked, I believe it was Mrs. Stapleton, if Dick ever got tired of running. She wasn't really happy with me.
But that's good.
I had to ask. But I just wanted to say that I enjoy the show and everybody that's involved in the Historical Society. And the directors there, it's just basically, it's got to be a labor of love. I know it's an awful lot of work, and it's just in your heart, and I compliment you, and God bless you for doing it. And I'm wondering, are you still actively looking for members, volunteers, to like, well, pretty much do anything, or like
yes.
myself, property, building maintenance, have a lot of experience?
Absolutely.
Glad to help out.
We're always looking for volunteers.
Yeah.
And a little tidbit here is, I live on Akron Road here in the town of Lockport, and my grandfather bought this building I live in, which was a Lutheran church. I believe 1849 is on a stone. And he had it made into a house, and next door to me, adjacent, is a cemetery that used to be connected to this property. And it's kind of an ironic tidbit here is the house just east of me that my dad put a foundation in a chunk of ground my grandfather gave him, and that was actually a church that was located on Lincoln Avenue in the town of Lockport on the property that borders the edge of the city.
Mm-hmm.
So I live in a former Lutheran church, and the gentleman that owns the house next door that my father lived in, that was actually a church building that was moved there and made into a home. So we've got two former churches side by side here on the same street that were former churches.
Wow, I'll have to have Amory look that up. Yeah.
Yeah, and you're more than welcome to get a hold of me at any time because it's quite unique as the upstairs is all one big open room, and about 75% of it is an arch like a dome ceiling, and it's all, from what I understand, hand-carved tongue and groove.
Oh, wow.
And the front end is, I believe, where the pulpit was, but they might want to bring some cameras and some people involved there and take some pictures of this and just have
sure.
them as part of the records.
Anne-Marie and the curator would love it. Could you give us a call when we get back to the museum at about 10:45 or so?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. Do you need the number?
Yes, I do.
Okay. 716-434-7433.
Okay. Thank you much, and I appreciate your time, and keep up the good work.
Thank you. And I can tell you, this is a job that I have loved. I never had the feeling like, oh, I don't want to go to work. I don't want to do this.
Oh, I can tell your heart's in it.
I mean, I have really loved this job.
And I compliment you and thank you for it. And
yeah,
I'm sorry I didn't speak up sooner. It's been on my mind. Got busy running the business here, but I'm getting a little bit older and got some different interests I want to pursue.
That's okay. That'd be great. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks.
Bye.
What a great call, huh?
Yeah, I'll say.
That was fantastic, yeah. And to learn the history of his house was a church, and then his house next door was a church somewhere else.
Well, it's funny because I have a girlfriend that just overnight took her husband to Waterport, where they changed a United Methodist church into like an Airbnb with five different suites in it.
Oh, I bet that's spectacular.
Yeah. And she said it's just beautiful. So
yeah.
I bet.
Yeah, so that's kind of a neat idea also.
Yes.
Good ways to save the old churches.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, all right. So Becky's going to start a little bit at Crystal Beach because that's the other thing that we hope people remember. I certainly remember going to Crystal Beach. And Becky and I both had a story from our mothers. My grandmother used to put my mother and her sister on the Canadiana to go to Crystal Beach. And my mother was born in 1915, so this was in the 1920s. Mm-hmm. And then they would spend the whole day unsupervised. Then my mother started this when she was 8 and took her 6-year-old sister.
Yeah.
And then came back at the end of the day. Can you imagine somebody doing that now, letting their kids do that?
No. You wouldn't even be able to cross the border.
They wouldn't even let them walk to the corner now. So that was interesting, but I do remember. So she's going to talk a little bit about the different attractions and buildings that were there.
All right.
I'll tell my story, too. My mother and her sister, they were teenagers and took the boat over to Crystal Beach and missed the last boat home, so they had to take a taxi home. So they were in big trouble when they got back home to the U.S. was quite expensive in those days to take a taxi home all the way from Crystal Beach.
I'm sure.
So Crystal Beach was an amusement park between 1888 and to 1989, so over 100 years. And we talked about, Melissa talked about the Canadiana. That was a passenger ferry in Buffalo, and it made it a popular tourist destination for both Canadians and Americans. And most people remember the roller coaster, the backety-back scenic railway, the cyclone, the comet.
Well, the cyclone became the comet.
Okay, the Comet was awarded coaster landmark status in 2009, and it's still open in the Adirondacks, still in use.
Let's see what else we can say. There was a little railroad that went around.
Yep.
There's a sheet with pictures.
Okay.
Also, the suckers.
Oh, the Hall Suckers. Yeah, Melissa had a memory about the Hall Suckers.
Because my mother only, had enough money to buy one thing, and that's what I always bought, was a cinnamon sucker.
Yep, and we were talking about the Loganberry drinks.
Yep, the Loganberry drinks.
Remember that?
Yep.
And they still sell the Loganberry drinks today. You can buy those in the supermarket. We also found out that the Crystal Ballroom was the largest dance hall in North America, and it could have 3,000 people at a time.
Can you imagine?
No, I can't. That's a lot of people.
That's
in there.
A lot of people.
And you had a memory of the Magic Carpet Funhouse.
Yes, I didn't like the. It had the air that shot up from the floor, and I did not like that.
No, it startles you, doesn't it?
It did startle you. Yeah. And it had the funhouse with the mirrors and everything, and then the floors were uneven. You went up and down and up and down, and then there was a slide that was the end. Well, that was the magic carpet part.
Ah, yeah. Escape.
So, did you go there as a kid?
I did not, no.
Oh,
no,
well, there's got to be people that went, because that was a huge thing.
Sure.
Was to go to Crystal Beach and spend the day. And the comet was wooden, so it was really jerked you around. And then there was one that was like a wild mouse, and it would go straight, and it looked like it was going to shoot right out into the lake before it made a sharp turn. It was all heart-pumping stuff.
Oh, it scared the gumption out of you, huh?
It did. Well, scared the tweet right out of you.
That's right. Well, once again, listeners, if you have a memory of Crystal Beach, give us a call, 433-1433. We would love to hear your memories of going up to Canada, going to that beautiful park.
Yeah.
Now, Hall's Suckers, is that the same company that makes Hall's cough drops?
I don't think so.
No, different Hall's?
It was Hall. Mr. Hall owned the Crystal Beach amusement park.
Oh, okay, so he had his own label then.
He had his own label. But also there was rides called the Scrambler, the Heyday, the Tilt-A-Whirl, the Tumblebug, or the Octopus. So if anybody remembers riding any of those.
One of them was one where you spun around. It was like a centrifuge, and it spun around, and the floor dropped off.
Oh, I remember those.
Do you remember? And
centrifugal force would keep you.
Kept you against the wall.
Yes.
Yeah, that was terrifying, too.
It was.
Why did we do that? There was a lot of it. But there was a lot. And then there was actually the beach.
Yeah, yeah, you could actually go sit on the beach and get wet. And
yeah, you could swim or whatever. Mm-hmm. And
there was also that says miniature rides and attractions in Frolic Land, which was for younger children.
Yeah. Then there were bumper cars.
Mm-hmm.
Never really liked those.
No,
sugar waffles,
you get whiplash.
We talked about too.
Sugar waffles, yeah. If people remember
I like
that.
Those.
Yep.
Love me some sugar waffles. Anything with sugar, I'm in.
Me too, unfortunately. But it was a great place to go. But, I mean, it was so many years. And, of course, the ferry left from Ferry Street in Buffalo.
Right. Yeah.
Clever.
Yeah, yes. And effective. Yeah. And prudent.
Very. So, I'm surprised nobody has called it. With memories of Crystal Beach,
because it was a real popular place to go.
Sure, 433-1433. Give us a call. We've got plenty of time left in the show to share your memories.
And we also used to go to Shirkston. Did you ever go to Shirkston?
I did not.
Oh, my gosh.
I don't think we went to Canada.
Well, and that was an old quarry, and it had filled up, you know, as it got to a certain depth.
Mm-hmm.
And so it still had the train and the things down there. So a lot of scuba divers used to go down there. But it was very deep, and the water was cold. It had two big slides, and somebody drowned in that quarry every year. So my brother, who was 10 years older, used to take me. And every time we'd go, you know, the whole way there, he'd say, if you ever tell Mom I took you there, I'll never take you anywhere again. Oh, we used to go and swim in Shirkston.
Right. Yeah, don't tell Mom and don't die.
Yeah, yeah. That was the other thing. Yeah.
If you die, I'll kill you.
Yeah.
That's how that works.
I think I had like a platform in the center that you could swim out to the platform and then rest and then swim back. It was quite large.
Okay. But, oh, we have a call. Here we go.
Okay.
Oh, good morning, caller. You're on WLVL. Share your memories with us.
Good morning. My memory of Crystal Beach, we took the bus from the falls to Buffalo and got the boat to go to Crystal Beach. And when I got to Crystal Beach, I sat at a picnic table with my head down because the boat ride made me sick.
Oh, my. I didn't even think about that. See, I went by car.
Yeah.
So a little bit of seasickness then, huh?
Yep. So I didn't really enjoy Crystal Beach.
No.
I was one of the kids. I had to sit at the picnic table with my head down on the table.
And then you had to prepare for the ride back, right?
Yeah.
Unfortunately, yes.
But did you at least enjoy it a little bit in between?
No.
No?
I didn't enjoy it at all.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, yeah. Those were the days.
Well, that's a memory anyway.
Yep. It's a memory.
Well, thank you for calling.
Well, there's all kinds of memories to be had, right?
There that's are what good. I wouldn't have thought of. Yeah?
Yes.
So, anybody else that's got memories of Crystal Beach? Maybe they got there not seasick?
Yeah.
Well, it says between when it's peaked in 1940s and 50s, they had 20,000 visitors daily.
Wow.
At least during the summer months.
Well, I remember it being crowded.
Yes.
Here's another one. Good morning, caller. You are on WLVL.
Good morning, Eric.
Hey,
morning,
Randy.
Hi.
How are you, Randy?
How you doing?
Good.
Hey, thanks for bringing up Crystal Beach. That brought back some memories. I definitely remember that mouse. That was pretty wicked.
Yes. Wasn't that?
That was wicked.
Wasn't that called the wild mouse?
What's that?
Wasn't it called the wild mouse?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
But I remember when the roller coaster was in the lake.
Was it in the lake?
Recently was in the lake.
Okay.
Parts of it were.
Because I remember it being really close to the lake, and maybe it was in the lake.
Yep, part of it was, and something happened, and then they revamped the Comet.
Yeah.
I do believe the Comet now is somewhere in New York State up by the Catskills.
It's in the Adirondacks.
In the Adirondacks.
Oh, the Adirondacks,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's still being worked. But, I mean, we were young, and it used to jerk you then because it was wooden. I wouldn't get on it now.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a real jerky ride.
Yes.
But the one that you said earlier, it really got me, was when I got on the devil's hole there, and the floor falls out.
Yes.
That was, you look down there, and there's no floor.
I know.
And I'm only like 8 years old.
And you're thinking, boy, I hope this thing works.
What happened to the floor? There's something wrong with the ride.
That's so
all
true.
Right.
I'm going to die.
Well, thank you very much.
Thanks, Randy.
Thanks for the memories.
All right, we'll talk to you soon. You know, there's another caller on Tradio that has a lithograph of that boat.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I have a postcard.
That's
Actually, Raphael Beck, the local artist, he painted the three, Mr. Hall's three children on horses.
Uh-huh.
It was a very large painting, and I saw it at the Maibaum Gallery, because we would have loved to have had it for the museum. But it was $20,000, so we didn't buy it.
A little over the budget.
A little over the budget.
Yeah, a little. Yeah, just a touch by a couple of zeros and maybe a decimal point or two.
Oh, okay. But it was beautiful.
Well, we have just about a minute to go, so we want to be thinking about some final thoughts here as we start to close up this morning's show. I'm so grateful that you were both able to come today and share your knowledge.
Well, I want to thank everybody that listened to me all this time. Heaven only knows it's been years, but I've really enjoyed it, and I really appreciate that the station was able to continue having us come as guests, and that's very appreciated by the museum, and also all the listeners, because that really is what makes it fun, is when people call in and do tell us their memories. I just want to say again, we have the Step Back in Time at the Cold Spring Cemetery at 1 o'clock on Saturday. It's $10 a person. But it has to be cash, and you can just show up if you would like. You go in the Cold Springs entrance by the White House, and I will be sitting there Saturday. Also at 10 o'clock on Saturday morning is when they're going to dedicate the last of the sculptures for the Lock Tenders tribute, all of the sculptures that were made by Susan Geisler, and they are representing a photo that was taken in the 1890s of the Lock Tenders, and I mean, they are magnificent. She did a wonderful job. And we are selling tickets for the Oktoberfest on October 21st. That'll be at the fairgrounds, and we have the Frankfurters playing the music, food by Donna Ike, and a really big basket raffle, and just a lot of fun.
Very good. And they can call the History Center at 434-7433, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, you can.
All right. And again, Becky Pittler, so nice to meet you this morning. We look forward to working with you in the future.
Thanks for having me, and I'm looking forward to it, too.
All right, folks. Stay tuned for Fox News here on WLVL 1340 AM.